so much for the
calendar. In the time when the oceans drank Atlantis and the rise of the sons of Arius, there was an age undreamed of. And on to this Conan, destined to bear the jeweled crown of Aquilonia upon a troubled brow. It is I, his chronicler, who alone can tell thee of his saga. Let me tell you of the days of high adventure.
You know I want to tap that ass, right?
The Linux Link Tech Show. The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. An hour of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open source, open mics. Live from the Linux Link Tech Show studio, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up. Link it up. And take it away. Take it away.
Fun with the asterisks, people.
Oh, and those bastards aren't
Dan,
here.
You made things so secure that we couldn't get, no one could get into it. We're streaming.
We're streaming.
We're in on, business.
We're recording. What aren't we doing?
Yeah, just make sure.
Yeah.
No audio stream going over while we're talking?
I hope no. I don't have the music playing.
That's good.
Anymore. Well,
you don't do that anymore, huh?
No, I do it sometimes, but I got home from work too late. So
you were busy today. You didn't even check your emails until like 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock.
Yeah, you know, I'll get to that in a minute. And I don't know.
You feeling a little better than you were last week?
Oh, a whole lot better. A whole lot better. I'm trying to figure out who's what and going where. I don't know where anybody is.
Alan's missing in action.
Yeah, I know where. But are they?
Link is at work.
Are they going to be on?
Link said he might not make it. We can go to the conference room and see if anybody jumps in.
You are currently the only person in this conference.
I'll leave that on. I sent an email to our guest tonight. Hopefully he's able to connect.
Oh, man.
You should probably leave your email up just in case he has problems.
No, it's up. Well, you know, I don't need to have that on anymore. Oh, wait. He's all the way up here, right? Well, hopefully we will have a guest on tonight, and if not, you know, I really apologize.
We're supposed to talk to Jim McQuillan from the Linux Terminal Server Project. We're trying to have them connect via one of our guest accounts in Asterisk, so hopefully it works. Otherwise, we're shit out of luck.
Yeah. Well, oh well. Such is the case.
I'm recording this via the line out from the mixer to my iAudio 5 music player, so curious to see what the sound quality is like.
Well, Alan says he cannot connect to the Asterisk server. So why don't you talk about...
My iAudio 5?
Your iAudio 5 there.
Okay, I'll start off with the iAudio 5. You guys all went out and got the iRivers. Real nice music player. But you guys didn't realize that it won't play back OGGs with low bit rates, which is a problem because most podcasts that are, you know, OGG files are low bit rates. It plays music files okay with the high bit rates, but when it comes to the podcast, no good.
Now, hello?
Hey, Alan.
Oh, I thought you couldn't connect.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't until just now.
Good, we fixed
Who's
that.
Who's that cursing in the background, your wife?
My wife's cursing in the background, yeah. I'm trying to kick the cat out of the room because she keeps sitting in here screaming. I don't know what for.
Well, at least we know Asterisk works.
Yeah, it just came up. I was trying earlier, and it wouldn't let me log in, so I don't know what the heck Dan was doing to it there, but it wasn't working earlier.
He was futzing with it. Well, actually, the server wasn't up until about 10 minutes after I got here, and then he got it up, and then we tried doing a test, and for some reason, he called me on my cell phone. For some reason, he couldn't hear me talking back, so then he's like, wait a second. He went and he checked his, IP tables?
Yeah, IP tables.
He didn't have the script running because he rebooted.
Oh, he locked us all out.
Yes, everybody was locked out. Pretty funny.
Oh. Yeah, I thought I put that in my, I forgot that I didn't put that in there. So, hey, you know what? We'll get that worked out for the next show. Why the next show? Yeah, and this is a good, You know what? This is really important because it was part of my talk, something I was going to talk about today, was fix your mistakes right away. And I should be fixing this right now. So why don't you guys talk so I can go fix this?
Okay.
It won't happen again.
Shall I continue with my rundown of my music player that I picked up?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, you guys went out and got the iRiver. Now, the iRiver is a nice little music player. It records nice audio files. You can play MP3s. You can play back OGG music files that are recorded at high bit rates. But when it comes to low bit rates, you have problems. Right, Alan, you have problems with it? It won't play back, right?
Well, I haven't really tried any OGG stuff on it. Usually just the MP3s. I've never had a problem with MP3s.
It just farts out.
I know the OGG sometimes, if you don't do it just right, you have problems.
Right, so I was going to get an iRiver, but, you know, because you guys had the problems and everything, they were supposed to... I know the people at iRiver were supposed to come out with an update to the driver, right? Firmware upgrade, but that hasn't happened as far as I know. So I was looking at some of the other music players that are available, and one that I saw that people were talking about was this iAudio, which is a Korean company. The company, I think, is Jet Audio, and the company is Siwon, I think it is. The one I picked up is a 512 meg player. It plays back MP3s, it plays back OGGs, and it also plays Windows Media Audio as well. It's got a little built-in mic to record, you know, voice conversations, and it also has a line in to record, you know, whatever. In fact, I'm recording us right now with the line in from coming out of the mixer. So I'm just curious to see what the audio quality of that's going to be like. It runs on a AAA battery. It's real nice, as far as I can tell. It's got a nice backlit display. It's got these two scroll buttons that you can scroll through the menus. You can go into your settings as far as the EQ settings. It's USB. It's USB 2. When I plugged it into my machine recognized it, and a hot plug picked it right up, and you know it opened up a little icon. So it recognizes it like a thumb drive. You can drag and drop files, no problem, because it's like a thumb drive. You can also store non-music files on there, too. So it functions as a thumb drive as well. First thing I did was, you know, before I listened to any music, I downloaded, you know, our OGG file of our latest episode. And I fired it up, man, and lo and behold, it plays. Real nice. The OGG sounds awesome. You know, I tried the Lug Radio guys, the last episode they did. Worked fine. So I said, let me try some OGG music files. So I had Penguin Planet. That played okay. But then I tried Fensters, you know, the free software song version that they do. I didn't like that. For whatever reason, those guys recorded at a really high bit rate. And this thing didn't like it. It completely just stopped working. It wouldn't pick up the file at all. But other than that, it works real well with the OGG files. When you're doing the voice recording, it records the MP3. If you do a really low quality, it'll record it as a wave, which is kind of odd. But
that's weird, yeah.
Yeah, isn't it kind of weird? That's the only thing that I thought was a little odd.
I think it'd usually be just one or the other all the time.
Right, but it's variable set bit rates for the MP3 direct encoding. Now, obviously recording and going to MP3, that eats up the battery the quickest. The battery life that they say is 20 hours just playing back music. And it's probably close to that. I got this thing on Monday morning. And I've been pretty much using it nonstop since then, and I just changed the battery like 5 minutes before I came into the show. So it's probably close to 20 hours. Yeah, it's real nice, man. You know, I set up my Bash Potter to copy right to it. It's really small. The thing that I noticed right away is the thing only weighs about an ounce, which is nothing.
Which makes it easy to lose.
Yeah, it's slightly bigger than, I think, a Bic lighter. A little thicker, but it's about the same height. It's real tiny. The case is plastic. Is the iRiver metal, Dan? Alan?
No, I think the iRiver is plastic, too. I don't have it on the desk here in front of me, but I think that case is plastic as well.
But you got a nice carrying case with it. It comes like a little leather case, right? Or pleather case?
Yeah, it's a little leatherette. A case there, or whatever the hell it's called.
Plastic to look like metal. It might be actually aluminum.
This thing comes with a little cheesy clear plastic case, but that's okay. It's just to keep it from getting scratched and everything. The other thing they give you, it comes with these little plastic films that you can put over the window so it doesn't get scratched. They also give you a USB cable so that, you know, it goes right in. It also has an adapter USB cable so that if you want to plug into the thumb drive port in the front, you don't need the cable. It comes with a little audio cable so that you can do your line-in recordings. And that's pretty much it. It comes with, it does, besides playing back the music files, you can record voice through the mic. You can record via the line-in. It also has an FM you can listen to, and you can record off the FM. So, not that I listen to most FM. Like, if I'm at work, the FM reception is really...
What in the world can you find to listen to that you'd want to record
exactly,
on
FM? Exactly. So, it's so far, I'm really digging it, man. It's really light and small. Now, I posted on the blog, my blog about this, and I also posted on the forum, and I was talking about, you know, what player I was going to buy. And someone had mentioned, you know, is it durable? Is it a tough window? Well, if you're just going to do, like, jogging and stuff, it's probably fine. You know, but if you're going to be playing, like, you know, tackle football or mountain climbing, it's probably not a good idea. Or swimming, obviously. But for $115 plus shipping, man, from Newegg, you can't beat that. Now, the one gig, cool. The 1 gig version with shipping and everything was like $170. I think it was $155, $160, something around that range. You can go to Newegg and check it out. It's the iAudio 5. Now, it's not the iAudio 5X. It's just iAudio 5. Now, they have a whole line of players. They also have the U2, the M3. There's like three or four different players that they have. And in general, people have been talking about them positively. You know, the reviews have been pretty good about this. One of the cool little features is you can change the backlight.
Cool. Dan's got to turn the mixer up just a hair on it. I can hardly hear you over
here. Mixer. Not that mixer.
Not that mixer, okay.
Not that.
Okay, got to turn something up just a hair there.
Is that better?
How about now?
Yeah, it's a little bit better, yeah.
Okay. So, for $115, man, you can't go wrong. It's comparable to the iRiver, you know. And I was tempted to get the 1 gig version, but I didn't want to spend that much. You know, $170. Well, going from $125 to $170, $175 is a little bit of a jump. If you're rich, you don't care, you know.
What's it, 500 megs now?
512, yeah.
512? Yeah, that's more than enough.
I think so, too.
If you're just putting the stuff from daily podcasts and stuff on there, that's
exactly,
more than enough.
Exactly, with my like my top 20 song list that I listen to, you know. My most recent audio that I'm listening to, music-wise. It's fine.
Your top 20 Britney Spears songs?
Yeah, Britney Spears, you know, NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, all those hot things.
I've seen you... We've seen you bopping behind the wheel down the highway.
I have a pretty eclectic taste in music, man. I listen to everything from like metal to like classical music to blues, jazz. I listen a lot of different things. So
cool.
It's good. I can listen to a little bit of everything. And the best part, it plays Ogg files, man, which is key. You know. Plus, I didn't want something that was difficult, you know, running drivers and everything. This thing is great because it's recognized as a USB thumb drive and it's real simple. Drag and drop, it doesn't get much simpler than that, you know?
Yes, it's true.
So, I recommend the iAudio if anyone's interested, you know? I'd be interested to hear how the 1 gig version of it. It's probably the same thing. It looks the same, it's just a different color. Now, this is a Korean company. There's been a whole slew of players that have been coming out from Korea recently. And in general, the reception's been pretty good compared to what's out there.
That's because the Asian companies get all their countries get all the good things first. They have all the neat toys over there.
Well, isn't Korea like one of the most wired countries in the world? More so than here?
Oh yeah, yeah. All those countries.
They all have broadband.
All this. Yeah.
I never been to Asia.
Well, I've never been either, but our company deals a lot with that because of the cell phones and stuff, and they get all the neat ones first.
Yeah. So. If you check out my blog, it's petervilla.homelinux.org/blog. You can see my last entry. I'm talking about it. I give a decent rundown of it. The features that I didn't talk about in my blog review is basically the voice recording, and I'm trying that now. So, as far as I want to ask you, Alan, I know you recorded my when I did that myth presentation back in was it April? You did that with the iRiver, right?
Yeah.
That sounded pretty good.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. I recorded it way too high. I know that much because we had a huge file and we had to chop it down.
But that's okay. You can just re-encode it. I mean.
Well, that's what we ended up doing.
You want
it? Because unfortunately, I wasn't paying attention, and I encoded it at like 128.
That's the highest that you can record that at?
it'll go real high, and it was just unfortunate. It's a little bit too much for the noise that we had going on towards the end there.
you can hear Dan scratching himself in the back of the room.
Oh, you can hear everything, yes.
now, the iRiver, when it records and encodes on the fly, what is that? What's the max, 128 kilobits?
I'd have to look it up. Actually, no. I think
256?
On MP3 on the input, you can go up as, I think, as high as 192.
That's pretty high. The most I can go on this thing is 128. You know,
if you go through the mic input, yeah, I think it's like 192. If I actually had a battery in it, I would fire it up and tell you, but
I've
got a dead battery.
Have you tried recording with the line in or no? I know you did a recording.
Yeah.
Well, we did the show at Link's house that time.
Did the show over there. I've used it to convert some of my old Grateful Dead tapes and stuff, because it just makes it a whole lot easier to, like, make an MP3 out of it just by using that.
So what
did
you do, just run a line up from the stereo?
Yeah, that's all.
It works
fine.
Pop
the tape in, come back in 30 minutes or 45 minutes or whatever, flip it over and turn it into two big tracks, and chop it up over in Audacity.
That's good.
That makes it a whole lot easier than trying to play around with it, plugging into the computer, getting the right levels.
Simple. Plug
I'm
it in.
Lazy.
Plug it in and hit record.
That's all you got to do.
Yeah, I'm recording this off the mixer, so I'm curious to see what the sound quality is going to be like.
Pat, you gave the guys an account that doesn't exist.
Did I really?
On the asterisk.
Crap. I'm sorry. I apologize to these guys. We're letting these guys come in through Asterisk and going into one of the guest accounts. And they're having problems.
Oh, we forgot to put the...
No. I gave them...
Did we forget to put the...
I gave them the wrong extension numbers.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe we forgot to create the guest accounts.
No. What are you going to do? You're just going to create them? Dan?
Yeah.
On the fly.
Is Link with us?
Why don't you put it in?
Actually, he's not.
I thought I saw him on here. Yeah, there he is.
He's in at work.
Ah, the fun from work.
Yeah, he's in from work, which is... Oh, yeah. How was your week, Alan?
Yeah, so far so good. Sucks at work. I had to stay late. I had to run my car up to the shop tonight, so that's why I'm not here now. Well, I'm here, but I'm not over there with you guys. All the things I didn't want to do today all came up, all had to be done today.
I know how that goes. I know how that goes.
I take it you overcome your Typhoid Mary over there, right?
Yes, I did. It took a while, but yeah, we got in. Pat, come back over here and.
Why don't we just give them the right extensions?
Push the button.
Dan, instead of trying to create new accounts for them.
Right.
Just send them an email. Give them the right extension numbers to plug into. They need two because it might be two of them. I'm such an idiot, man. I freaking emailed the guys from the Linux Terminal Server Project and I gave them the extensions to connect to and I gave them the wrong extension numbers. They don't exist. Again, I apologize.
Yeah, we're batting a million tonight.
Really, we're doing
holy mackerel.
This is like more last minute than the time Dan showed up all liquored up. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember.
It was like, what was that, March? Meet
yeah.
Alan. It's like 5 minutes of showtime, and we're like sitting here. We're like, where the hell's Dan? Is he going to show up? I'm like, Alan, do you know how to fire up the server, get everything connected? He's like, I don't know anything.
I had no clue what to do.
Pretty funny shit. But we're coming up on episode 100, guys, and I'm trying to line up a couple special guests, but I have a couple of people already lined up, but I'm trying for a couple more. It's going to be a fun episode. Are we going to do like a 3-hour episode?
Yep. Just the two of us.
Oh, a 3-hour one?
Marathon session?
We're just going to do leave it on just pre-record one and just let it run.
Sure.
Two Slurpees. Cherry for me.
Aaron's going out for Slurpees again, Alan. You're missing it.
Oh, bummer.
Yane's wife is so nice. She goes out and she buys us Slurpees. It's actually not that hot in here for once.
It's not hot for me at all. I got the AC on over here.
That's right. You're styling. You're in the command center over there.
Yeah, which reminds me, I better turn the fan down because I'm pretty sure you guys can hear the fan.
Yeah, I can hear something beeping in the background.
Yeah.
But
turn it down so it's not so not quite as noisy.
So we were talking about maybe we're going to do a highlight, the 100 episode highlight reel. And I sent you guys an email talking about what we're going to do as far as like the highlights. I picked 7 or 8 of my favorite moments from the past year. And if you guys can come up with 2 or 3.
They're all my favorite.
You got to come up with a couple of them. So well, maybe we'll do like a little clip. Maybe not as so much as like what Link did last year. You know, where it's really
you mean when I have to remember our past shows?
Well, that's why the index is out there. You can go back and look at them.
Oh, they're so traumatic. I can't remember them.
It hasn't been that bad. I mean, we had that little bad one with the mixer.
Actually, none of them have been bad.
Not horrible.
Well, the first time with the mixer, but, you know, it sounded good to us. It just didn't quite sound good to everybody else.
Yeah. Well, once we got the compressor, things definitely evened out after that, I think.
Yeah, I think the show overall is sounding a whole lot better than it did there in, what was it, June when we first got the mixer.
That, yeah, but we had
that
to
whole
get
month
we had to get a mixer,
up.
Man. That you know that old Radio Shack mixer was okay when it was you know just two guys talking, but as we got more you know you started talking more and I came on, we needed to get something a little more complex and flexible, you know, than the little $20 Radio Shack DJ mixer.
We need more. More buttons and lights.
More outboard gear, right?
Excuse me?
More outboard gear. Compressors, limiters, go crazy, right?
Well, the next thing I'm thinking of getting, and it probably won't happen for a little while yet, is I want to get an audio splitter for the back there so that Dan can pull his level, pull his tap off without any problem. We can tap off to the Asterix machine without any problem, get all the audio out, and it's all going to be the same level. You know, it's sort of like a mixer in reverse for the audio feed.
Right, so we're not, like, you know, splitting the signal 50 million times.
Yeah, the problem with splitting the signal is you end up with an impedance problem eventually, whereas, you know, you turn the volume control down on one, and
it goes
turns
up on
the volume control up on it, it turns the volume up on another line.
So this will keep things nice and even, right?
Yeah. Yeah, everything, you may tap off 4 different times or 5 different times, but it, as far as the audio signal is concerned, it's only being tapped once. So it'll work nice. Trouble is, I don't have the money for it right now, so it's going to have to wait. And
what is that we're going to run?
It's probably going to run about $120 on it, probably a little bit more once I get the cables, and I got to pay attention to what cables we need back there. Because unfortunately, it doesn't. We do a lot of our stuff with you know the quarter inch jacks over to you know over to the Radio Shack you know RCA jacks and stuff, and our little headphone tree over there and everything.
I don't think we need to use that thing anymore. I think we can go back to the headphone amp.
We may be able to, yeah, because the audio seems to be going all right on it. But I know the one distribution system I was looking at used everything was in XLR connectors and stuff, so I may have to find some adapters for that.
Most outboard gear, audio gear, is XLR, isn't it?
A lot of it is. There's XLR jacks on the back of the compressor as well. We use the quarter inch just because that happened to be the easiest things we got on it. But there's also both input and output back there on XLRs. So I have to buy some cables and stuff. I have to sit down and look at what we have, and you know, in terms of what we have in terms of jacks in the back, and find out what I need before I go and buy the stuff.
Are we going to go to the telephone, Dan? He's having problems connecting. Our guest is having trouble connecting to the Asterix server.
Hold on, give me a second.
Want to give it one more shot, or
wait? Just keep talking.
Okay. So I spoke to John Watson today from the GNU Linux User Show. I asked him about the name change. I know he changed the name because he's going to talk to RMS the next episode, I believe. And he said it's going to be a permanent thing, GNU Linux User Show. So that's cool. And I also talked to him. I said, you know, You know, I gave him an open invite to come on anytime, and he said he's going on vacation now, so he said after he gets back from vacation, he's probably going to come on at some point and say hello. We could chat with him. He's out in Calgary, I think.
Probably got to bring the penguin chick on, too.
That's his wife, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Dan, you talked to John, didn't you?
No, not.
No? Directly. Emails?
Yeah, just a little bit through emails.
Kelly's his wife, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it is.
I think it is, too. But he seems like a nice guy, so we'll talk to him and we'll chat. He's out in Calgary. I think Judlin's out in Calgary, isn't he?
Who is?
Judlin. He might not be in Calgary proper. He might be somewhere, one of the other towns outside.
You'd have to ask.
Hey, Alan, are you on the IRC?
Yeah, I'm on the IRC.
Is Judlin on there? Dave?
I don't see him, but then I haven't really been paying too much attention to everything going by.
Okay.
I've just sort of like been glancing at stuff, so I have to look back and see.
Well,
I don't see it. Don't see him now.
Okay.
I could be missing it.
I don't know, Dan. Do you want to talk about music stores, online music stores, and Linux compatibility, and or you want to save that till after?
No, I do want to do that.
But you're trying to fix the problem while we're talking. I know you want to get your two cents.
That's it.
What'd you do now?
That's what I thought.
Oh, sorry.
More fun. More fun with asterisks here.
There we go. Now we're in. Woo.
You connected?
Yeah.
Hallelujah.
It was the wrong username. When this stuff runs and it runs so well, that's why. We never have issues. You know what I mean?
Well, the ASIC server is kind of flaking out, right, Dan? You're saying that the driver's kicking out
the hard drives,
some sect errors.
Problems.
We should probably switch that sooner than later. So, I have a spare drive that we can throw in there. And I don't know. Do you want to build it from scratch with Debian, or do you want to go the asterisk at home route again? What do you think?
No, this is fine. We'll just take what we have because we already have it.
Well, they have a new version out of asterisk at home. Unfortunately, this version that we have on here, you can't upgrade it to the new version, you know, via, you know, Yum or apt-get or whatever.
We have to do a full reinstall of it?
Yeah, unless we go with the old version. But the new version's out. Supposedly, it fixed a bunch of bugs. So it might be worth going to. We'll talk about it, see what we want to do. But we're going to do that sooner than later. The other thing is we want to leave it on all the time. I know it was down for a couple of days. I don't know if Dan had a power failure or something.
No, it wasn't a power failure. Like I said, the hard drive's getting really flaky on it, and that's the problem.
Yeah, the drive that I have in there is one of these 10 gig Maxter drives that I've had for like, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 years or whatever. And it seems that those Maxter drives, at least those ones, I had about 4 of them. They all crap out eventually, and this was the last one that was still working. But I have an 80 gig Maxter in my new machine. I don't have any problems with it. It was only with these old drives going back, 3, 4 years ago. So, I don't know. Maxter or nothing is like the cheapest freaking hard drive you can possibly buy. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're crap, I guess.
The only hard drive I've ever had fail on me is a Samsung, which I'm just actually looking at right now. It was a 2.1 gig one, and it died on me.
2 gig?
But knock on wood, all my other ones have still worked.
I've had Western Digital.
Knock on wood.
I've had Seagate. I've had Maxtor. The best ones, as far as have been Western Digital and Seagate, for the most part, have been pretty good. Going back a long time ago, I had a gig drive that failed on me, and I sent it to Seagate, and it literally took like 9 months to get a new drive back from them. But they did replace it, though, so I give that much to them.
Not too quick there.
Yeah, you go on and you call, like, the number, and they literally put you on hold for, like, 3 hours.
That's what speaker phones are for.
Typical call center shit.
Your call is important to us. Please stand by.
Your call will be answered in 200 minutes.
In the order that it has been received.
How are we doing, Dan?
We should be good to go. I'm waiting for... I'm trying to verify that everything looks cool, and it does. Everything looks good. So I can... did they say they wanted more than one person?
Yeah, I gave them... Well, I sent the email. I told them I gave them two extensions, but they're both wrong extensions.
Let me give them another extension.
Yeah, give them another one just in case.
I gave them the one that you originally sent them.
Oh, so what'd you do? You just created a new account?
Yeah.
Do you have the Flash console? We can't log in.
No, yeah, I'm logged in. Yeah, I'm logged in. That's fine.
You remember the password?
We are good to go. Yeah, no, the Flash console doesn't require a password.
Oh, okay.
But
if you're going to create...
No, it wasn't the password that was wrong. It was the username.
Oh, okay.
It was username.
It's always something. I must have 20 passwords floating around in my head on any given day. And sometimes I remember them, sometimes I don't. Hello.
Hello.
Obviously somebody connected. Yay.
Is that you, Jim?
This is Jim McQuillan.
Hey, Jim. How are you?
Really apologize about that.
That's all right. Is there any way we can get Scott online?
You know the information we sent you with all that information we sent you about connecting that you just used? Increase that by one number. So add one
to
that.
He's been trying 107 and not getting in.
He's not getting in because I just created
it. Okay, let me have him try it right now.
It helps if you restart the... they hit that little red bar on the ass.
Yeah. Let's see. He should come in.
Hopefully.
Yeah. So are we on the air now?
Yeah, we're on.
Yeah, we're on.
I apologize, Jim. That was my fault. This is Pat talking. I'm really sorry about that.
Damn
you,
Pat.
You know what the problem
is? That's all right. Don't worry about it.
The problem
this is technology.
The problem is I installed it at my house. And then I configured it, and then I brought it over to Dan's, and Dan totally reconfigured it, and all the settings were completely different now.
And never bothered to tell anyone.
I understand.
But
I understand. I've been playing with his X-Lite client all day. It's pretty cool.
It's pretty nice, right?
Yeah. Well, K-Phone is like a steaming pile of something.
This is pretty nice. It's really pretty gooey.
Yeah. Yeah, let's see. I don't know if Scott's getting in or not.
Well, we're looking at the panel right now. Don't see him connecting. You want to start, and then hopefully he can connect after we.
Well, yeah, I can start. If I've got Scott on IRC, and I'll see if I can get his attention. But I'm happy to start anytime you guys are.
Yeah, let's start up. You know, just give us a little background on the Linux Terminal Server project.
Okay, you want some background?
Yeah.
The LTSP has been around since August 4th of 1999. That's what we call the official birth date. It's all about SYN clients on Linux. Looks like Scott's coming
up. Scott's here.
There he is. Scott, how are you?
Hey, there we are.
All right, we got
everything. That's
okay.
Jim.
Boy, Scott's good and clear. I was just explaining to these guys what LTSP is. It's thin clients on Linux. Take out the hard drive, take out the floppy, the CD-ROM, because you don't need them. We boot from a boot ROM typically, either PXE or Etherboot. We do a DHCP request to go get an IP address. We download the kernel using TFTP. Start executing that and turn around and mount the root file system via NFS and launch the X server and you know, sounds pretty simple. That's pretty much what it is.
What are the basic requirements for the server?
What we generally tell people, we like to see people put a whole bunch of thin clients on a server. And the general rule of thumb for that is 256 megs of RAM for the server before you add any clients. And then add 50 megabytes for each client. So if you have 10 clients, what does that work out to? About 750 megs of memory?
That's not too bad.
No, it's amazing how well a Linux server scales. You know, other companies are putting 3.6 gigahertz dual hyper-threaded Xeons out there, and they run XP, and it's okay.
And then this is with full.
And you know, that kind of a box, we could run 150 clients on that kind of box.
Now this is with full X Windows, right?
Yeah, the full X Windows system. You can run any X application you want. I'm sitting here with GNOME on my desktop, and I think Scott, what are you using, GNOME now or IceWM? I forget what you're using these days.
I'm using GNOME these days, pretty much exclusively.
Okay. Yeah, and on the same, you know, on my server, I've got my terminal and my wife's terminal. She's doing KDE, I'm doing GNOME, and no restriction. You can have as many of either one as you want. If you're going to do a lot of thin clients, GNOME and KDE both are fairly heavyweight. So we recommend people run a lightweight window manager like IceWM or FVWM or XFCE, one of those.
Now, what are some of the applications that you run? Is it the full-blown desktop environment?
Oh yeah. I'm running GNOME. I got Firefox going all the time. I got OpenOffice. I fire that up when I want. I run VMware because there's a few apps I have to run under NT. So I have VMware running. There's no restriction. You want to be careful of full multimedia applications because trying to send full motion video down the wire can be pretty slow.
Yeah, that eats
but,
up a lot of bandwidth.
You know, for office apps, you know, just whatever applications you're used to using, just keep on using them.
Does audio go across?
We have a way to do audio across. Right now, it's one-way audio, so you can play your CDs and listen to them on your speakers plugged into your thin client. For full duplex, like to run a SIP client, we actually run that client on the thin client. We're running KPhone on it as a local application, which is kind of highlights one of the benefits of LTSP. You can run some apps locally. It's more than just an X terminal. It's it's an X terminal with the ability to run apps locally if you want to.
Now this whole environment probably is perfect for education setups.
It's great for education. I used to say probably half the people that are using LTSP are schools. I think that number is going up. We're seeing it deployed all over the world.
Do you have a ballpark figure on how many installs you got going?
You know what? It's in the hundreds of thousands.
Wow.
It's hard to count. You know, it's hard to count any open source application because we just can't keep track of where they're getting it from and who's doing it. But I think we owe a lot to the K-12 LTSP guys. That would be Eric Harrison and Paul Nelson for bundling LTSP into a distribution. And that's how it's. You know, they've made it really simple to install by doing that. You just get the ISOs, you load the machine, and you're good to go.
Have you guys set up a consulting firm for anything to help you set up?
We've got a company. My partner Ron Kulcernian and I, we created a company called DisklessWorkstations.com, where we sell thin clients and services, network cards and stuff, and that kind of helps fund the development. Nobody's getting rich off of that yet, but you know we have our hopes. So that's one of the things. There's other companies out there as well that have created consultancies to basically to deploy LTSP, and that's one of the things that really excites me to see all these companies, you know, these guys out there starting companies to make money off of this. I love it. I wish them, you know, all the luck, and I try to help them wherever I can.
Now, I work in an educational environment, and I'm very interested in LTSP. But one of the questions I have for you, and I don't know how experienced you are with being able to answer this, but the biggest hurdles I come across, I mean, LTSP would be a great fit, but the first thing that they'll say is, well, we can't run Office, Microsoft's Office, and there's a ton of educational applications that they have that will not run on under Linux.
What they have now won't run.
Right.
Okay, but what's out there, there is plenty of stuff out there that they can use. The people that say that they can't run Office, what they need to be doing is teaching their students word processing, not Word. They need to teach them spreadsheets, not Excel. If they teach them spreadsheets, they can sit down. The kids can sit down and use any spreadsheet that's out there. Instead, they're focusing on individual applications, and that's not where I want my tax dollars spent. I want my kids to learn, a wider variety of things. So as far as Office is concerned, OpenOffice fits that bill perfectly. For the educational apps, if you take a look at K-12 LTSP, it ships with a whole bunch of educational apps. There's Tux Typer and Tux Math and all kinds of applications that the students can use. And there's also applications for the administration to use, for the teachers to use, like for grading tests and stuff. So there's a ton of stuff in the K-12 LTSP project that's at least worth setting up a machine someday and looking at.
And with the...
I hope that answers your question.
With the LTSP, you're not limited to connecting only through Linux clients. Like, you can connect...
That's right. A very popular thing to do is keep a Windows 2003 server on your network and use our desktop to attach to it. We got people doing that all the time. I don't think it's realistic for us to assume we can just go in there and completely replace Windows.
Right.
But we can go in there and work alongside it, and we can do the Linux stuff where it makes sense, and they can keep their Windows boxes there where it makes sense. And hopefully, eventually, they'll wean themselves away from the Windows server. It's a hard sell to go in there and say, we're just going to completely replace it.
So then the client end has to be a Linux boot, right? You can't use... Like a Windows machine to connect to the LTSP server.
In fact, you can. We focus on the thin client part of it, where we want to take a box with no moving parts.
Right.
But if you have Windows PCs that you want to connect to the network, put an X server on the Windows PC. SigWinX is a beautiful X server for Windows. There's some commercial ones out there. Hummingbird Exceed is a great X server. Put that on the PC. And connect up to the Linux box. You can get a full desktop that way, if you want, or you can just get individual applications running.
If I can just jump in here for a sec, another way that you can do it, and we certainly used this when we were first selling LTSP where I work, is basically just making boot floppies, taking the existing Windows box, booting it off the boot floppy. It becomes a Linux diskless thin client. You're not using the internal hard disk. And all you have to do when you're done is just remove the floppy, and bam, you're back to your Windows box.
Awesome.
Yeah, in fact, that's common for like a computer lab in a school where you got 30 or 40 PCs. You know, it's a Windows lab, but maybe you want to teach a one-hour class on Linux and Unix. So you create 30 boot floppies, and you just pop them in there for that class. And when you're done, you take them out. No harm done, and... kids go back to using their Windows stuff for the next class.
This is a fantastic solution for, like, situations, say, like at a convention where you need a bunch of terminals set up with Internet access. You go and you set it up, or...
Yeah, that's right. In fact, several conferences we've supplied an email garden using LTSP. Also, there's a guy in the Boston area who's... His company supplies registration equipment for conferences, and he's using LTSP. He shows up there with a truckload of thin clients, sets them all up so that the attendees could come in and register for the conference. It's all LTSP, and it's a great use of it. Instead of a truckload of real PCs, it's a great way to go.
Now, what about account management? Obviously, when these people connect to these to the LTSP server, they're going to need accounts on there. How have places been handling that?
The sites that I work with, we just go with good old-fashioned, you know, Etsy password, and we use the add user command. But a lot of people are going to LDAP now. Scott, you're using LDAP in your location, aren't you?
Yeah, we're using LDAP, and With the LTSP, that works really, really well because of the fact that then you've got single point of sign-on. In my office, we've got four different servers at the head office site, and people can literally just, you know, log out from one machine and walk to a completely different server on a completely different area and go ahead and log in, and they have all their own files and all their own settings and everything. It works fantastic for that sort of thing, and that's, you know, very easy to do under Linux. So yeah, that's a very viable option these days.
So have you been approached at all by any of Novell or IBM with incorporating your products?
Yeah, there's a couple of answers there. I've talked to Novell several times about incorporating LTSP into their product. When they started talking about non-disclosure agreements, I started walking away.
Okay.
I was not terribly excited about that. I talked to Red Hat. They never said non-disclosure agreement, but I just didn't have a good feeling with them. Now we're working with Ubuntu. You guys are all familiar with them, right?
Yeah.
Mark Shuttleworth and the Ubuntu guys. Scott and I and Eric Harrison and another guy went to Sydney back in April to work with the Ubuntu team to spec out the next release, which is Breezy Badger. It's coming out in October. It's going to include LTSP. We're also going to be at the next developer meeting in November to continue that discussion about what to do next with LTSP and Ubuntu. Basically, you know, what's it going to look like in April when the next release comes out? Breezy plus one, they call it right now. So, yeah, we are working with a distro. Now, I think partly because we're working with Ubuntu, the Fedora guys are kind of interested. There's a couple of Fedora guys that I've talked to, and we really want to get LTSP into Fedora. You know, then, you know, you get into Fedora, then the next step is maybe into Red Hat, right? You know, into their Red Hat Enterprise Linux. So yeah, we are working with these guys. Now the other question was IBM. Interesting thing about IBM is they're deploying LTSP-based solutions to their customers, and they're also using it internally. You know, IBM is committed to replacing all their Windows PCs internally with Linux, and one of the ways they're doing that is LTSP.
Now, you have an extremely mature product, because I know LTSP has been around for, a good 4 or 5 years at least?
Six years now.
Yeah. At the last few Linux expos we've been to, we always see you guys set up in the .org pavilion.
Oh, yeah.
And it's always
hot. Oh, yeah, that's our chance to get together. You know, I put out a call for volunteers for Linux World, and I'll get 10 or 15 volunteers that'll show up to help out, and it's just a good time.
Were you guys in San Francisco recently?
And this year, yeah, in San Francisco we were there. We took Best of Show.
Oh, congratulations.
For their Linux Product Excellence Awards. So, yeah, we were really excited about that. It was kind of a surprise to us. But yeah, we're always at the Linux World, and I go to lots of other conferences all over the world. I've been out to Brazil 4 times now, and Spain and Italy, Germany a couple of times, and England, talking about LTSP.
Cool.
And kind of showing them what we can do.
It's exciting stuff, and I'm sure you got a lot of interest overseas as well.
Yeah, it's been great. It's it's just a couple of guys hacking in their spare time. It's kind of fun. I see Whiprush is asking me to tell you guys about the VoIP phone thing. One of the things we did at Linux World is we built KPhone as a local app to run on the thin client. So we're at Linux World with a thin client. We had Asterisk on our server at the show. We had a connection back to a VoIP provider. And from the show floor, we could make telephone calls.
Who'd you use
as
your VoIP provider?
I'm sorry?
Who'd you use as your provider?
I've got a friend who owns a telco. I get in the back door. I have a friend who owns a telco who provides the backbone for BroadVoice.
That's what we're using, by the way.
He's one of the upstream. Really? He's one of the upstream providers for BroadVoice. And he's right here in Pontiac, and I'm in Waterford, Michigan, and he's just 6 miles down the road.
That's funny.
But he's been a friend for like 15 years, and he gave me an account on his server, so we just connect up through that.
We just started playing with Asterisk, and it seems pretty cool. You know, we're still learning it. I mean, we were using...
Oh, it's a tough learn.
Yeah, it is a tough learn. We were learning... We were doing Skype for our interviews, and it's okay when you're doing a computer-to-computer interview, but going out to a real landline, it's horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is... we're connected through Asterisk right now, right? It's working pretty well.
Yep.
Once you get the account set up, right?
Yeah. This is an 800 megahertz machine, actually, with about a gig of memory I got in there.
Doesn't do any good when you don't have the account set up.
You know, one of the things we do at Diskless Workstations is we do services for customers, but we always try to make sure that whatever we do is really more like commissioning an open source work. So this K-Phone local app thing, we did this for a customer. They paid us to do it, but we made sure that whatever we do is, and that's what we showed at Linux World. So we... for this customer, 170 terminals. It's a call center in Arizona. 170 terminals, all using LTSP, all running a VoIP client built into the thin client.
How powerful of a server were they using?
I think their server is a dual Xeon with 4 gigs of RAM.
I was going to say,
it doesn't need to be a huge server.
For that many people, you probably need something decent.
Yeah, well, you know, what's a dual Xeon cost these days? You can get a decent one for $4,000 or $5,000, you know, a name brand one. And I think that's what they're using. They're powering 170 thin clients off that puppy.
And what's their network backbone then? I mean, what do they have going out to each client?
What we generally tell people to do is go with gigabit between the server and the switch and 100 megabit from the switch up to the thin clients.
Oh.
That's all you need.
And they're doing a call center off that.
174 people. That's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. That's huge. The biggest customer we have here in Detroit is 140 thin clients. And they're doing everything. They're running OpenOffice. They're running Firefox. They're doing some custom business applications. And, boy, they get their job done every day with that server.
It's fantastic. That's what it's all about. Real places using Linux, you know, for their everyday use.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, you know, it's kind of the bread and butter of America. That's where I really like to see this stuff go. And you know, the other place is the schools. The schools are huge. Mark Shuttleworth has deployed 80,000 terminals in South Africa using LTSP, and he's got a goal of doing about 200,000 before the end of the year.
Wow.
South Korea's got something like 1 million terminals deployed using LTSP.
Wow.
Brazil is using LTSP for their Telecentros project, which is they've got a bunch of cyber cafes. They're gonna, when it's all done, they're gonna have 6,000 cyber cafes with 20 terminals each. That's 120,000 thin clients that they wouldn't be able to afford if they had to use real PCs with Microsoft Windows.
Wow.
I was watching that Go Open show that Mark Shuttleworth's foundation funded, and one of the episodes that we're talking about these education centers in South Africa where people would go in and they would have, you know, share 6-8 terminals onto one machine.
Yeah, that's it's kind of a multi-headed project. HP did something with that. It's called 441, I think. There's also a company up in Canada that makes a solution like that. And there's a company down in Brazil that I've seen that makes a solution. And now what they want to do is use LTSP for that, so that one box with like 6 or 8 monitors plugged into it won't even have a disk. It'll be diskless using LTSP.
Is there
talk about spreading the hardware out there.
Maybe this technology is too immature for this, but what about LTSP over wireless connections? Has that been attempted yet, and how successful has it been?
Yeah, there's a couple of ways to do it. You can't boot over wireless because the boot ROM doesn't have enough space to hold all the information you need to bring up the PCMCIA bus and then initialize the network card and then use it to go get a kernel. You really need the kernel first. You know, it's a chicken and egg problem. So what we do is put the kernel on a flash disk and boot it that way. It really needs some more work because we just haven't had a chance to keep it up to date, but it does work. You know, you can boot the kernel locally and then connect up to the server.
using the wireless.
Almost like maybe a PDA or a stylus of some kind?
No, more I'm thinking still a full PC, just no wires, you know, with a wireless card in it. I suppose another use would be like a tablet PC or something.
Okay. So now, do you see companies or school districts, what are they doing? Are they buying terminal clients or, you know, just terminal workstations, or are they buying using older, outdated workstations?
Initially, we saw them using old stuff because they could get it so easily from businesses who were upgrading. And now the types of systems you can get from businesses are like Pentium 3 500 megahertz machines, which make awesome thin clients. You know, we consider a minimum thin client anything with a PCI bus and 16 megs of RAM. That's kind of the bare minimum for a thin client. But, you know, these guys are getting P3 500s with 256 megs of RAM. So that's fairly common. But now that LTSP has been out there for a while and people are trusting it, they're actually buying full thin clients. And they're buying real state-of-the-art hardware. The thing about a real thin client is there's no moving parts in it. There's no fan on the CPU. There's no fan on the power supply. There's nothing to fail. So 10 years from now, that thin client's still going to be working. You know, meanwhile, how many power supplies would you have replaced on that old Dell GX1?
That Dell GX1 isn't going to last 10 years.
Right, you know. Right. Well, the first thing that'll go is the power supply fan or the CPU fan, and then what have you got? You know, a melted pile of crap.
And then the hard drive goes.
In a box that you can't fit anything else in.
Yeah, and it's noisy and that's no fun. So these thin clients that we have now, they're small, they're cool, and there's no noise. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to walk into an office and there's no hum from the computers. You don't realize how noisy your environment is until you go into a quiet one.
I got a couple of servers laying around unused at work. I'm going to give this sucker a try. Finally.
Go for it, man.
There you go.
But now's not a good
time. There you go. In fact, you know, wait for October and put load Breezy on it.
I'll wait for October
and
it'll
just be there right out of the box.
Hive.
There you go. Yeah. Like any of us will have more time in October, right?
So then
it just keeps getting worse and worse.
So Breezy's coming out in October and they're gonna be working close, you guys are working closely with Ubuntu.
Yeah. In fact, if you pop into our IRC channel on Freenode, it's /LTSP. You'll see the lead Ubuntu developer is Matthew Zimmerman. He's on our channel. There's a couple other Debian guys there, and like the last week they've been working solid on this, trying to clean it up. So you can talk to them on our IRC channel, and yeah, we are working closely with them as well.
So then the LTSP server and client utilities and stuff that they have right now available in Ubuntu, is that what they're working on right now, or is this a special project?
No, it's what they're working on right now. What they had in Ubuntu before was just the LTSP utils package,
right,
which you download that, it's our installer, and then you run LTSP admin, and that would install our LTSP version 4.1. What they're going to have in October is the whole next generation of LTSP. It's kind of redone. We specified it back in February. We talked to them in April in Sydney, and now they've been doing a whole lot of the grunt work to make it happen. And that's what will be in October in Breezy. In fact, it's there now. In fact, tonight we're going to put out an announcement that there's a Breezy Colony 3 CD. It's an ISO image. So you can actually load Breezy now from an ISO, and that's going to include the LTSP stuff.
Awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of fun.
Now, how does Flash work over LTSP when you're using a web browser? I mean, is it...
Flash animation?
Right.
You get enough of it, and it'll kill your network. Right? Cause
it's not good, basically.
If you're running it on the... Yeah, it's not good if you're, you know, in schools you get a lot of Flash animation stuff, and it's really not all that bad. But if you get enough of it, you get 50 users using Firefox with Flash animation going, and it can put a real drag on your network. The trick there instead is run Firefox as a local application, and run your flash locally, so it's using up the workstation CPU, not the server CPU, and then it's not using the network. You know, it's just running locally on the thin client.
So we found at work. Sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
We have both Flash and Java enabled at where I work and the systems operator. And you know, for the most part, it's generally only maybe two people in our environment that's hitting Flash or Java applications at a time. And if you've only got some sporadic Flash or Java usage, they won't notice a difference from, you know, being right on the console. But yeah, Jim's very correct. If you have 50 people started up at the same time, then you've got a bit of a problem.
So when you're saying run it locally on the work on the terminal, does that mean when you boot up the terminal, it'll pull down like a copy of Firefox to run locally?
Not at boot time, but when you go to launch it,
right?
Because we've got a root file system mounted over NFS, it'll read the Firefox binaries over NFS and load them into memory on the thin client and execute it there.
Okay.
You know, the thin clients that are out there now, we've got one that's a gigahertz VIA chip with 256 megs of RAM. It's really a shame to just run the Linux kernel in the X server in that much, you know, with that much horsepower. So we can take advantage of that by running some applications locally. And Firefox is a great candidate for that.
So when you want to run these applications locally, is that something that's set up on the server side?
You set it up on the server side. You have to. We use SSH to launch it. So from the server, you type SSH back to the thin client. You tell the thin client to launch a Firefox for you.
All right, so it's not something that they would just click on an icon and it would launch and automatically.
Well, what you do is when you set up the icon, what goes on behind the scenes of that icon, it's usually you run a shell script, and that shell script does the SSH command for you.
Okay.
So to the user, they have no clue. They hit the menu button or the icon on the desktop, and it just launches Firefox. They don't know what's going on under the hood. But behind the scenes, it's a shell script that fires off SSH and Firefox for you.
So then are you doing the same thing with, like, OpenOffice, trying to, you know, do you better performance?
OpenOffice is a different beast. What we've seen with OpenOffice is it's a great server application. Office shares its resources so well with other invocations of the same program. You fire up the first OpenOffice, and it takes, 10 to launch? I think OpenOffice 1 has gotten better than 1. But it takes, you click on it, and the second user comes along, and they click on the icon, and it snaps on the screen so fast they can't believe it. It's because the program is already in memory.
Right.
It just has to, because of the way Linux and Unix do sharing of code and libraries and stuff, it really isn't a good server app, because so much of Firefox happens in JavaScript and Zool and all that rendering. You know, it's really all data in Firefox. So that makes that doesn't make a good shared app, whereas OpenOffice does.
So in OpenOffice, you get 10 or 20 people connected to OpenOffice. You're not using that many more resources on the server.
That's right. That's right. You get 50 people using OpenOffice, and it still runs pretty well.
Now, what happens when you get 50 people running Microsoft Office on a Microsoft Terminal server? Is that a well-designed as OpenOffice for networking?
You know what? I just don't live in the Microsoft world. I've been a Unix guy since 1984, so fortunately I haven't had to deal with Microsoft Office on a 50-user terminal server, so I really can't answer that.
So you guys aren't going to institute server licensing and then per-seat license and per-client license on top of that? No. No?
No. No.
Oh, that's too bad.
No,
huh?
that's not what we're here for. You know, people say, well, why don't you sell it? If I created LTSP and sold it, there would be about six people using it right now because I suck at marketing. Right? It's you give it away for free, and it's really easy to market.
Uh-huh. Well, you guys have a fantastic product.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to give it a whirl because it's something I've been wanting to do for a while, particularly in education environment. And I know that... The K-12 project has been And that's about what, 3 years old? Isn't it the K-12?
K-12, I met Eric Harrison in Toronto in 2000. It was like spring of 2000. That's where he was already doing something with a K-12-like thing, but he had some other way of doing thin clients. I said, Eric, take a look at what I'm doing. And we've been great friends ever since. And it took Eric about 3 weeks to completely change his distro to include LTSP. It was awesome what he did. So that's 5 years.
You know, here's a question
for you. He came along not long after us. Yeah.
Here we go. One of the things that schools would ever use a terminal server for is to provide remote access so that the people that work can work at home. How does the LTSP server fit into that? Is that possible?
LTSP, you couldn't just take a thin client, take it home, and plug it into your cable modem.
Right.
That's not how it works. We really need a boot server locally. So for people who want like a remote office with 10 terminals, you know, set up a small boot server, put your 10 terminals on it, and connect that back to the main office. But if you just have one terminal, LTSP is not the right answer.
Would it be something that they'd be able to access using
If they had an LTSP server and they had their laptop at home and they wanted to connect up to the LTSP server at the office or at the school, they can easily do that. They can use VNC. They could use NX. There's several ways to solve that problem. NX is getting a lot of press lately, and it's working really well.
And it's got a great cost too. Price is Right. It's not going to cost you anything.
If you use free NX, and the client is free, so yeah, you can go that route. We're looking at how we can incorporate NX into LTSP. A lot of people are asking for that, and really, it's only helpful when you've got the remote people that want to connect in. In the office, it's not terribly useful.
Right. Well, I want to thank you guys for coming on. Unless you have anything else you want to add, I mean,
it's been a blast. I feel like I did all the talking, and Scott just said, "Yep, yep, yep."
I mean,
Yeah, well, no, you were doing such a darn fine job, I just stepped back and let the master do his work, you know.
I appreciate the opportunity to come on here and talk. This is a blast.
Well, we appreciate you coming
absolutely.
On. This is a fantastic project. Oh, you know what? What about architecture-wise? What architectures are you guys supporting?
Architecture is cool. We built LTSP initially for x86. You know, x86 servers, x86 clients. Now we can run LTSP on any router. It doesn't even have to be Unix or Linux. People have installed LTSP on Windows NT. All you have to do is be able to serve up NFS, DHCP, TFTP, and XDMCP. So we can handle any architecture. We've run LTSP on the IBM S390s. What do they call them now? The Z90? I don't know. Whatever the big iron is from IBM, we've installed LTSP on that. So that's not x86. We've installed it on the AS400s. We've installed it on all kinds of things. So the server architecture doesn't really matter. Yeah, Sun's running Solaris, HPUX. The server architecture really doesn't matter. It just needs to be able to serve files, basically. For the client, right now we support x86 and PowerPC for clients. And the PowerPC is huge in the schools because they all have those old Macs.
And they will have old Macs in a couple of years, too.
Yeah. So, in fact, this whole switch from PowerPC to Intel that Apple's doing is going to be great for the schools because there's going to be a whole ton of PowerPC hardware becoming available real cheap.
So you can...
And they make dandy terminals.
Can you then do using a PowerPC, do a net boot off of the Linux terminal server and get a... Oh, wow. And that's just as simple as holding in the N key.
Dan, you got an N now.
You can even do it without holding the N key. There's a way to configure it to just always boot over the network.
That's true.
When
when a boot ROM sends a DHCP request, it sends a vendor ID. The DHCP server sees the vendor ID, and from that we can do some conditional logic in the DHCP config file. And we say, oh, that's an Apple. Let's give it the PowerPC kernel instead of the x86 kernel. And we, you know, we pass it back the path name to the PowerPC kernel, which turns around, and when it goes to mount the root file system, normally we mount /opt/LTSP/i386 as the root file system, but that won't work for a PowerPC because it's all compiled for x86. So instead, they mount opt/LTSP/PPC, and that's all the PPC binaries. So on the same server, we're serving up both x86 and PowerPC stuff.
Very flexible.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I'm really proud of what we've done. It's pretty cool.
That's fantastic. Keep doing a great job.
Well, thanks.
Well, we'll have to talk to you in the future about this.
Yeah, that'd be great. I've enjoyed this. I can't wait to go download the file or point my friends to the stream and have them listen to it.
I'll send you the links when we're done.
Yeah, we'll definitely give you those links.
All right, great. I'll put it on our website. And I'll put the links on the LTSP website. But anybody that wants help, go to ltsp.org. That's our website. Go to freenode.net. That's the IRC server where the LTSP channel is. We got a great mailing list. We got an awesome community of people that are willing to help them be successful in this.
All right.
I appreciate the opportunity to get on here and just talk.
Thanks for coming on.
Anytime, man. Thanks
a lot. We really enjoyed it.
Absolutely.
Take care.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks very much.
Bye.
Thanks. All right. Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye. You know what? They don't actually have to leave. They can stay on if
they
want.
No, they can hang out if they wanted to. They could join in the conversation.
Is Alan still there?
Alan, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
I thought he died.
He's so quiet.
I thought I heard a gunshot in the background.
No, I'm just, I don't have any good questions, so I just listened because it was a real good interview.
That was a very good interview.
Yeah, they were great. They talked. They were great.
Those guys, every Linux Expo that I've been to, they were always there in their booth. And
it was always mobbed, man.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff what they're doing, man. They have a lot of possibilities what they can do with the software. And like you said, especially with these old PPC boxes, you know, 2-3 years down the road, you really think Apple's going to be able to run on them? You know?
Well, I mean, it'll be able to run, but they're not.
Yeah, like shit, though.
Yeah. I don't know if they're going to continue producing. They're not going to continue producing OS X for PPC. So, hey, you know, who knows? We'll see what comes
terminal
out.
Server project.
We'll see what happens.
Dan, you have an angle now to get some Linux installed in your school system.
You know what? It comes. What it comes down to is the biggest hurdle here is the users more so than the
administration.
Absolutely.
They don't know.
They're so afraid to not. I don't want to say they're so afraid to learn anything new that it's more or less that they've got so much they need to get done that it's hard for them to find the time
to relearn things that they do.
To learn new things. They don't
want to make the investment in the time that they have to relearn to do things.
And sure, we could say there's a lot of parallels, but when you stick somebody in a little bit in an environment and they're comfortable with, and then you change some stuff, it always causes turmoil. And that's the biggest hurdle right there. Because I've been slowly introducing OpenOffice and doing teaching sessions on it and showing people how they could use it in their day-to-day work. But it takes a while. I mean, like, these people are you know, about a third of them get it. You know, a third of them get it. And they usually have no problems. The other third, they need to be walked through, handheld a lot of the way. And then the final third, just they don't get it at all. I mean, they're just
completely clueless.
I don't want to say they're completely clueless, but it's just not clicking with them. And they don't,
they
end up
anything.
Getting that attitude. Or they put up mental barriers in their way. Like if they don't understand one thing, they're gonna right off the bat, you know, they don't understand
Did
anything.
Did Link just jumped in?
I don't know. Maybe Alan died again. So
no, I'm still here.
Sound like someone jumped in.
But it's not that they don't get it. It's just nobody's probably ever sat down and taught them in a style that they could understand. You know, and they can pick it up. It's tough for some people. You know. That's understandable. But
speaking of school systems, did you see that article? Some school system down in Richmond, Virginia, they were selling about 1,000 old, you know, 3-4 year old iBooks.
Rampage.
And they had like 12,000 people show up, and it turned into a freaking riot.
I thought it was more like 5,000 people showed up.
No, I read one article. It said 12,000.
Well, I know that it was posted on Slashdot a few weeks ago that they were going to do this. So you got to expect it was going to cause a mob scene.
But it was insane. Did you see the video of it?
I didn't see the video. I just saw a picture and I read the article.
Oh my God,
that you
it's crazy, man. Supposedly,
it looked like they funneled all those people through like an 8-foot-wide gate.
but they
the picture I saw, and it was like, you know, just bodies on top of bodies.
Well, what was crazy was some woman was like she pissed herself because she didn't want to get off the freaking line. How crazy is that, man?
You should have pissed on the guy next to her.
I could have paid her. But then they had some guy with a little kid in a stroller almost got stomped on. Some old guy got freaking trampled on. I mean, crazy shit. People turn into such savages, man. It's insane.
Now, was it? I didn't read too much more other than the article that you guys had. Did they limit the sale of these to one per person then?
I think so. They only had 1,000 of them, and you know, so many thousand showed up. Now, if they had any brains, what they should have done was the first 1,000 people that showed up, give them numbers. Okay, after the numbers are all given out, you get the police to announce, okay, people, numbers have been given out. If you don't have a number, leave.
Yeah, but you know what ended up happening? You'd have all these people show up before those numbers would be given out. You still have a rampage.
Well, there's only so many you can give out, you know? It's first come, first serve.
Or you could have just given everybody a number and then had a lottery.
Random lottery. That would work, too.
There you go.
Exactly.
Or you could have just got one of those big riot guns that they're working on now.
Just gas
the
crowd.
Laser gun.
Water cannon.
The audio guns, yeah.
Yeah, and then you could just blow everybody away. And whoever left standing can come and buy one. If you can make it through the hail of rubber bullets, you're in.
You know what this really reminded me of? This reminded me of the day after Thanksgiving. In the United States, the day after Thanksgiving.
Black Friday.
Black Friday, they call
Black
it.
Black Friday.
It's the day to not go to the freaking store. You get these idiots standing online at 4 o'clock in the morning just to go because they want to, you know, get a DVD player for $5, you know? Oh, my God, you know? It's insane. It's like people stomping on each other.
I used to have to work Black Friday when I worked in the stores, and it was hilarious to watch this people.
People are such assholes, man. They're going freaking nuts. I went to...
Go ahead.
When I was living in Whitehall, there's a Best Buy right up the road there, and I saw an advertisement for like, what was it? I think it was like a box of like 100 CDs for like $1. So I just go in there, you know, the store opens up, I go in. The store must have been open maybe 2 minutes. I went over to where all this advertised stuff was supposed to be. It was gone. You know,
they'll buy anything.
It was like a tornado.
When I worked in the store, it was one Black Friday. I'm dating myself here, but this is back when the Cabbage Patch craze, the dolls were, that craze was going on. And it was Black Friday, and the people were lined up out the door waiting just because they knew the store had these things. And you had to run into the store and then make a left to get down to toys, and they just waxed the floor. It was hilarious to watch the old people hit the ground as they hit that corner.
Oh,
it was absolutely freaking hilarious.
You're evil, Alan.
We were so sadistic at times.
That's terrible.
Freshly waxed floor and old people, man. It just doesn't match.
People are insane. That's all I have to say about it.
You know, one thing I wanted to say, you know, this past week, there's been a lot of discussion back and forth. Actually, a couple topics. One
the
was
big one.
I don't know if we're going to get time to get to the big one yet.
We should talk about it a little bit.
But what I wanted to bring up was about the whole Kutztown 13 thing that we talked about last week. Last week was a weird show.
Should we try to get a hold of one of those parents?
No.
No?
You don't want to go down that route. One of the things that we've been having a debate back and forth on the forum about the whole issue, and I want to come up and say I agree that, you know, it's gotten to a point where it's being taken too far. Federal charges being brought down. Maybe that's too harsh. I can probably figure out that this is one of these situations where it's been a lot of back and forth going on, and it's just ends up escalating out of control with this. But one thing I want to bring up that as I thought about this more and more, and not to go into, you know, into the discussion of how school districts work and who's right and who's wrong and all this stuff. One thing that I noticed that I don't see much commentary on, or people don't really, I don't see a lot of people saying this, is number one, probably the biggest risk to any security, network security, anything, is human error or the human element. And the whole thing with when they put the password taped to the back of or the bottom of the machine, that, in my opinion, was probably not an intentional thing, but more likely an error, a mistake on somebody's part. And everybody makes mistakes.
You think they might have had a machine sitting in storage and they accidentally gave it out and the thing was still attached?
It could be a possibility. It could be possible. They could have put, you know, it could have been people, a bunch of people working together, you know, people doing different parts of it. This
doing
is the
installs,
password on this
yeah.
machine. Anything that could happen, it could have been human error. I mean, it was human error. Now, what I thought about after this is I said, everybody makes mistakes, but here's the problem. And this is one thing that I think is really kind of atrocious and shameful that you don't hear coming out is, number one, why didn't the student or any one of those students come back and say, look, this was on here, it shouldn't have been here, or this is probably a mistake. You know, report that. Because if you're, if one thing we always talk about, particularly in the United States, is in school districts, is building a community, educating students to not only be, you know, lifelong learners, but to be respectful and honorable. And that, to me, since nobody has really brought that up, that's kind of shameful that nobody came forward and said, look, somebody made a mistake. Here it is. Instead, they exploited that mistake. All right? They exploited it for their own needs. And sure, kids will be kids. I understand that. But nobody has come up and said, the worst part of this is that somebody didn't step up to the plate and do the honorable thing and say, look, there's a mistake here. Instead, we got to go to battlefields, this side going this way and this guy going the other way. It's almost the same as if...
Bring in the lawyers, Dan. Bring them in.
Well, but still... It's just like if I left my car and accidentally left the back window open ajar and somebody broke in, didn't steal anything, but just walked, looked around, I would be outraged, right?
Dan, what the problem is, Dan, in today's society, people don't look to do the honorable thing. They look to do the easy thing. And the easy thing is to get a friggin' lawyer and friggin' sue somebody. That's the easy thing to do these days. Get the friggin' payout. That's what people are looking for. And it's sad, and that's a sad thing about our society. That's what it is.
Right, but you know, and that's true, it is. It was a stupid mistake. The person should, you know, I can understand how something like that could happen. But on the flip side of that, nobody came up to plate, nobody came up to bat. And I mean, you get the next question would be, well, why aren't they teaching kids how to be ethical?
Because it's a public school, that's the problem.
Well, it's not just public school. I mean, what about, you know, the parents, the community? Why is anybody concerned that the ethical thing wasn't done? That's just my piece on that.
CYA, Dan. Cover your ass. That's what it boils down to.
Well,
okay, when the shit hits the fan, people run, man, and they cover their ass.
Right, but hey. And I'm not saying that, you know, these kids should have been slapped with federal offenses. No, that's not it.
I think that's a little extreme, man. Now these kids are going to have records for the rest of their lives.
No, they're not going to have records.
Well, if they're minors, it gets wiped out once they turn 18.
But, you know, I can understand why they start going down that route, because it is, I mean, you start messing around with the grading system, and people say, well, okay, here's a good example. They say, what is the harm in any of this, okay? So if that person were to take those passwords and use them to make changes on the grading system or mess around with somebody's account, it could result in a lot of harm and you know, say a student was college requested students' transcripts, and they went in and mucked around with some students' transcripts, and they sent to college the transcripts that were mucked around with, and the kid didn't get into college. There's an example. I can understand why, you know, when you look at it in that light, that it could be considered a federal offense for what they did, because you're messing with somebody else's life. The potential for that is there. But, hey, you know, we could debate this till the cows come home.
Absolutely.
We actually have to get off of BinRev.
Well, the other topic that we wanted to talk about was an online music store friendly Linux and without DRM. How much time we got left on BinRev? Not too much, right? a minute or two?
No, we actually have to get off now.
Okay. Good night, Ben Rev.
Good night. We'll talk about it more next week. Or
listen to the Og file.
Yeah. Well.
Alan, you want to say good night to the Ben Rev?
Hey, good night, Ben Rev.
It's too late, Alan. They're already gone.
Sorry about that. Next week we'll talk to him.
Oh, well, any other comments or questions before we close up? I don't want to... I don't want to go off and talk about the whole...
It's a good discussion, the whole All of Me MP3, whatever, All of MP3.
See, I don't know if I want to... It would be on the MP3, but the people listening on the stream...
I think that's a good one for next week.
So we're
going to save it for next week.
Oh, well.
Yeah, I don't think we have anybody lined up, but we might have a kernel developer on next week, right? From SUSE.
Right. So, and then we'll have everything up and running the way it should be, instead of no more surprises. And
what do you mean, with asterisks?
Yeah. I mean, we'll have the asterisks running, and there won't be any issues like we had this week.
Nice.
Yeah. So go ahead and make some noise, boys, while I find some stuff to play us on out of here.
Alan, you should have came. I burned your copy of North Pole 13.
All right, well, I'll pick it up next week.
Okay.
That would be a good one.
I also have North Pole 24.
Cool.
North Pole 24. How many of those North Poles you have? You must really like it.
Just a couple of them. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Peter North.
Mr. Quarter Come.
Dan likes number 13. He likes the first scene.
I don't know, man.
Was that the one of you? Was that the one we were playing?
Yeah, that was the one we were playing. I like the one. I like the one with the Russian chick at the end. That she's pretty hot. The blonde. Did you see that one?
No, I only watched. I breezed through.
He's only made it through the first 10 minutes.
Nobody ever makes it through the first 10 minutes. You watch it in 5 minute clips. Just leave it at that.
Hey, that's what the fast forward button's for.
Hey, it's got chapter indexes.
Oh, there you go.
All right, hold on a minute, Alan. Let me play this out of here. Hold on a second. Don't leave, Alan. Hold on.
All right, we'll still be here.
Hold on.
Hold on. What is best
I take it you're playing the going away music there?
Yes. The go away music.
The go away, I should say. Sorry.
That is good.
The lamentation.
Were you making egg foo young in the kitchen? I was in the dining room having sushi.
I'm gonna figure a way to pipe you off.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
It's so nasty. Well, gag me with a furball.
The Linux Think Tech Show.
You guys are so weird. We have nothing to compare you to.
How dare you stand there and criticize? Do you think I don't know what's going on around here? Do you want to make your own choices? Or do you want the state to make those choices for you?
Welcome to the Linux Link Tech Show.
Bam, down, down.
I like that riff at the end. Ding.
I wrote that myself, right?
Play guitar?
No, I'm just kidding. I was kidding. Come on. It's not over yet. There's still one more bit. Hold on. Here we go.
It's over.